SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday, race fans. I'm sure you can hear. Yeah, you can hear already in my voice. I'm laughing. It's been the funniest morning, and I'm compelled, as I often am, to recount and relate what has gone on, and not that I haven't done my, you know, requisite amount of show prep, but it's been the funniest morning. Thanks to the wonders of the internet, I got dragged into something this morning, and I just finished in the last 15 minutes a text exchange with Anthony Stabile, and because I came across something that I knew Anthony would love, and I said, you got to see this. And it was sort of they say things come in threes, I guess. There's been a series of these bots that I'd love to find out the work that goes into it. But it started early this morning when I fell asleep last night during the Colgate-Bucknell-Patriot League semifinal game. And Colgate was up. I mean, they were just killing them. They were up like 30 points. And so I started to, you know, pay less attention. And next thing I knew, I fell asleep. So when I got up, and I got up at in the 4 o'clock range, and so I went and, you know, I DVR'd it, so I watched the end of the game, and then I went to go, you know, see what kind of stuff was written about it, and the recap, and also, you know, to see who they were going to play in the Patriot League final this weekend, and they're playing Loyola. But it led to a little search that got me to a bot, essentially a search mechanism thing, and I'm just looking to find the actual name. Here it is: Camptown Wiki. And it's a bot that is searching Wikipedia every, I don't know, I forget what it said, every 2 hours. For chapter headings for Wikipedia titles of articles, and then finding a pentameter match and plugging it into Camptown Races. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. And so, I mean, I was compelled to follow it. It's got, I think, 12 followers, and the one that caught my attention involved Colgate. And the stanza is, and I'll do it in Camptown Race parlance, William Freeman, Myrick Goss, doo-dah, doo-dah, Colgate Raiders men's lacrosse, oh, doo-dah day. And there's dozens and hundreds of these. It's the craziest thing. So, okay, that did lead me to look up William Freeman Myrick Goss, who there's people listening who went to Purdue, and you're waving your hand. I went to the library, the Goss Library. William Freeman Myrick Goss, a famous Purdue engineer, head, I guess the first head of engineering, and a famous famous professor at Purdue. The craziest thing, but it's pretty humorous to me. So anyway, so that started things off. Then, while I'm doing some generic scrolling, I come across an account that's known as Random Philly Athletes. And I don't follow it, but somebody, you know, some Eagle-related thing undoubtedly retweeted it, and it's Smarty Jones, and it's his derby. It's his derby. And so I watch it, and it's a wonderful, I'd forgotten what a wonderful call it was by Durkin. And I'd also forgotten what a dark and miserable and dank day it was. And so I described it. I said, had forgotten how dank the day was. And about 10 minutes later, I get a notification on Twitter. And I've been retweeted by a bot that's known as the Dank Bot. Somebody set up a bot. Anytime the word dank is used, it's the Dank Retweet Bot. I mean, what is the point? Anytime anybody on the internet or on Twitter uses the word dank, this thing latches onto it and retweets anytime the word dank is used. And you know, dank in German, obviously, you know, there's, I mean, how many German tweets probably include the, you know, D-A-N-K, dank, dank. So that made me laugh and sort of got me intrigued. And then in the last half an hour, 45 minutes, I see this hysterical, there's a thing that is bubbled to the surface of the internet, Tony Soprano crying to songs. And it's the clip. For real, you know, Sopranos aficionados, and this is where Anthony Stabile comes in. It's a scene that's instantly recognizable. That Tony's in the car, you know, thinking to himself, and realizes he's got to go handle Zelman. And this guy has created this account and is dubbing in music on the from the radio with Tony crying. It's the funniest thing. I don't know why it's funny even, but it is. So I instantly sent the link to Tony Stabile because I knew Anthony would love it. And sure enough, he said, you know, is there any reason you sent me this other than the awesomeness? I said, no, the awesomeness is the point. So this has been my morning of dealing with this insanity with three different sort of bot-ish, you know. And somehow, I mean, this has taken easily an hour and a half of the morning. Easily. I can't afford this kind of time taken away from my focus. It's unbelievable. So this has been one of those mornings where you see people tweet that you know, they say, I can't believe this website's for free. This has been one of those warnings, because I went from one thing that amused me, and you know me well enough to know that it doesn't take much to amuse me, but I've been captivated by this insanity. And actually, the thing with Dank was funny, because that derby is famous for a lot of reasons. I mean, not just, you know, the first, for, as Durkin says, the first undefeated derby winner since Seattle Slew, but the just calamitous rainstorm that swamped the track. And, you know, this was at that period where the clubhouse turn was, you know, forever had that. There were a lot of theories. There were theories that it didn't drain well because there was concrete in the sewer, and so water backed up and it didn't drain well. That was a famous apocryphal, probably an old wives' tale. Maybe it wasn't. The point is that first turn was always where, you know, the track, if the track was going to wash out, that was the spot. That was a problematic spot. So, and there, you know, they had to deal with that swamping of water. But there had been constant storms. And I can't remember if on Friday, I think it was that was a shadow. I think that would have been a shadow in 2004. But that was the year of the rebuild of the clubhouse. They were gutting the clubhouse and putting in the luxury everything. And so Millionaires Row and a lot of the exclusive seating had been relocated to the infield. And there was the tent, the Millionaires Row tent, where the back end of the ground was so saturated with rain that the moorings, that the tent started to give way, and the back end of the tent started to collapse. And famously, I was not working. I was working the barbecue. I was on the other side. I was on the building side, and my partner Barry was on the infield side. And that the tent that collapsed, the part of it that collapsed, it knocked over a bar, and they were worried. I mean, management, at that time, I don't know if Levy was restaurant, it might have been Aramark at that time, but they were like, oh my God, we got all these, all these guests, and they're going to be horrified. And instead, the guests quickly ran to the bar, picked up all the bottles, and took them to their table. And nobody, they were worried there was going to be all kinds of complaints. And I think later in the year, I remember hearing that, there was like two complaints, and that which was less than they ever get, that people had the greatest time. And there were people in suits and with their pant legs rolled up and barefoot, and people lost their shoes in the mud. There's been a series of these. I mean, this was not the only one that happened like this at Derby. That would be a fun show to accumulate all the tales of these kinds of derbies, because there's been one every so often. I mean, the one, I think it was Lemons Forever's year, when you had the tornado on Oaks Day. You had a tornado at 11 a.m. touchdown on the other side of Taylor Boulevard. and the time they had to clear the infield. I mean, there's been so many crazy things. And people were worried, people were carrying on about moving the Derby to September. Forget it. The regular first weekend in May has enough great craziness associated with it. And that certainly was up there. But I can... It just makes me laugh. Thinking about, for those of you that remember the old clubhouse it seems like it's so long ago, but that big open area you have now, that's with the paddock, it wasn't like that. The building, came out and it there were all kinds of columns and Really, the spot, the only spot that's left at Churchill on that plaza, the only place that's left that feels like the old layout is by the parlay. That's the only part that's left. And with the overhang, and there's still some windows there. And my first couple of years doing barbecue at the Downs, that's where me and Barbecue Bill Mayberry, we would be set up there, and we had to stand there. And then I also, a couple of years, I was over by Silks. Silks, for those that don't realize, when you come up the escalator in the clubhouse where Silks is now, that used to be down on the ground floor, and it was a separate building, that was parallel to the clubhouse. And there was a stairway, and we used to tuck a barbecue stand right underneath that stairway. And Chris Carter used to come. Chris Carter would come to the Derby every year. And there were a couple of years in a row where Chris Carter would come and get the barbecue from me when we were stationed there. That was a good place, too. And then the year of Giacomo, the old dining room, the old not even a dining room, it was a cafeteria. It was a cafeteria, and now it's sealed off, and you don't even know it's there. But there was a cafeteria, and then it became an employee cafeteria for a while. But the year of Giacomo, literally Derby Week, we said to the Aramark people, "What are you doing with this dining room?" "No, we don't have anything to do with it." I said, "Well, we'll do barbecue there." And so I got to run that, and it was so much fun. Oh my God, did we have fun? Because there was like seating. It wasn't seating. People had to stand up at like cocktail tables. But I think actually there might have been some tables. But anyway, there was room for probably 120 people. And I had a full kitchen to run back there, and that was so much fun. This has been my morning. This has been what I've spent the day. And Marty, because I asked the question, I said, I think this was the year, you know, that the infield Millionaires Row. And Marty said, absolutely. And as he calls it, the demolition derby. So I guess I can pull out the old chestnut. I'm old enough to remember when the Downs was not as when it wasn't as elegant as it is as it is now, because it was different. They've done an amazing job, actually. I mean, it used to be that you couldn't move, and now you could have a capacity crowd of 160,000, and you don't even feel it in that on the front side. The front side used to be impossible. It would take you an hour to get from one side of the paddock to the other. Literally. It was impossible unless you knew a couple of, there was a couple of little hints, little hidden passageways to get you through, duck under, and you could save yourself, 10 minutes. But so my mind was triggered today by some crazy stuff. It's pretty funny. So there you go. Casey says, funniest opening ever. I don't know. Maybe I'll send out links to those things that I found, including the Tony Soprano thing. You'll get a kick out of. And the Camptown thing, it was bizarre. That I spent half an hour trying to figure it out, and then I finally found a source page where they explain what they did, how they created it. It's crazy. All right, a couple of things. Let's line it up. Dick Powell is going to join us in a little bit, and Tony Black and Steve Haskin and Andy Serling, who's overdue a couple of days, Thursday visit. I'll try to get Seth in as well, and I want to get Popo back on too, because we'll handicap another race or two. And in fact, those two races that Popo offered yesterday with form to win. First of all, that Danya's Magic finished second and got beat a length and a half, was leading and looked like a winner at one point, but then got corralled by Princess Nina, who ends up winning at 4-1 with, by the way, Jose Farrar. What a fun visit with Jose and with John Court. And Jose had a huge day, three races that he won yesterday. But Danya's Magic was almost 5-1, and he ended up with a nice $33 exacta. Danya's Magic, who was the horse that Popo keyed off, but Princess Nina was actually the second choice on form to win. So if you pulled it up, you found your way to that exacta, and as it happens, they were I think the second and fourth choice. One, two, three. Second and fifth choice. So you ended up with a nice return. And then the other horse also finished second that Popo came up with. Baby Boomer in the ninth was 5-2. Well, actually, make it 7-2. Make it 9-2. I'm looking at the wrong number. Was 9-2. And finished second to another horse that was second on the form to win, who was actually the favorite at 3-2. Kerry Raven with a overdriven gelding. And this didn't pay as well. This, you know, this was a 3-2 favorite, but still, it better than not cashing at all. And if you bet Baby Boomer, if you figured out a way to, you know, to leverage him, you might have. I mean, it was tough because the first and second choice were first and third. So the best scenario on form to win is when it's showing a race where the favorites are, you know, not nearly among the top selections. It's when it comes to the analyzer, and it, and I really am, there's a number of people that are starting to sign on and you know, and catch on. And as Popo mentioned, next week you'll be able, even if you just download it and without even subscribing, you're going to be able to get two free races, access to two free races a day. So you can really learn it and play with it and get comfortable with it before you subscribe. So it's a great job by Form to Win. So we'll get Papo back in here. A couple of news pieces. I should mention, keeping an eye, I happened to talk to Mark Cassie this morning, and the hearing for Spanish Love Affair is later today. So keep an eye out for that. I'm sure Marty or Mike Welch will tune into that and see if there's any overturning of that problematic disqualification from last week. Saw a thing, too. Maybe I'll bring this up with Dick. Tacitus hurt himself in the stall. Not seriously, but he's going to have to be relegated to walking. So he's not going to make the Dubai World Cup again. He's 0-2 trying to make it to the World Cup. He is as, is it star-crossed? Star-crossed appropriate, I guess? I don't know. he's a lightning rod. He's a lightning rod for something. Tacitus. Some news on the herpes concerns, and good news at, for the most part, good news at Gulfstream. After having to, you know, add precaution, they didn't want any horses running and, you know, commingling yesterday that had been anywhere in proximity to a horse that took ill. And the horse, it's an odd story, and the details aren't complete, but horse was a runoff during training, and appears to have fallen, and maybe a concussion or something. But when later that night had to be euthanized, and the concern was that he had shown neurologic, he or she had exhibited neurologic, you know, problems, traits, and so the first thought was, is this potentially a herpes case? And it turns out it isn't, and so that concern down in South Florida is alleviated, which is good. Feel terrible about that, and the specifics about the horse have not, you know, whose it was and such has not been made public, at least that I've seen. But anyway, feel badly for them, obviously. So the racing can go on this weekend is the good news. And meanwhile, at Laurel, they continue to watch and maintain the quarantine scenario, and no racing on Friday, but Saturday they're lined up for a nice day. They're calling it, was that the Good Samaritan? I don't know if you saw this. They're nice card. Handful, I think four or five stakes on Saturday at Laurel. Here it is, the Beyond the Wire, and the Not for Love, the Harrison Johnson Memorial, the Conniver, and the Private Terms. Got some nice fields. nice set of races at Laurel. So everybody doing what they have to do, what they can to be cautious when it comes to the EHV1 concerns. Reach for the, I never got yesterday to, we ended up with such a full docket, the Oaklawn scene. And obviously we'll talk later this morning, particularly with Steve, about the Rebel. And, you know, with the two races kind of stacked on top of each other, it's an eight-horse field. And I guess you could have thought maybe there'd be a couple of more, but much like what we had this weekend, particularly in the San Felipe, the Rebel, you know, has got some headliners, and then some, you know, potential step-up types. So if you didn't see this from the draw Tuesday, we'll hammer tomorrow and we'll cap this in and out. Rebel, by the way, is not part of the cross country on Saturday. Two races from Aqueduct, three from Arkansas. And the three from Arkansas end up being two stakes, actually. The Hot Springs isn't part of it either, where Whitmore makes the seasonal debut. But the Essex and the Temperance Hill are the two. Then there's also an allowance in between, a sprint, and two allowances from New York. But the Rebel, here you go. Caddo River draws the rail. So in a lot of ways, this sets up for him the way things set up for Life is Good. In the San Felipe, draws the rail, and coming off the big Smarty Jones performance, you know, which he wins by, you know, his last two wins, his maiden win in November and the Smarty Jones win, you know, 9 and 10 lengths respectively. So Florent Giroux, 9-5, Caddo River from the rail, Big Lake, and Big Lake coming out of a pair of Fairgrounds wins, his maiden and his allowance performance, and he's been good. He's been good, and he jumped forward as a 3-year-old. You know, he had made two okay starts, moderate starts at Churchill last September, October. Big Lake. This is a Mike Rutherford homebred, if you don't remember, American Pharoah, out of the Student Council Mare Resistivity, and 12-1 with Santana, who gets back aboard. Rode him in those first races at Churchill. Hosier, who Bob Baffert on Monday told you was going to enter this race, and on paper, Hosier looks pretty good on paper. Stretched out to the mile and a 16th in that maiden win, an 84 buyer, and he's 12-1. Martin Garcia, kind of fun. Harkening back to many glory afternoons with the Bob Baffert barn. So Hosier, who was beaten by Concert Tour, who, of course, is in this field, but the Pioneer of the Nile out of the Henny Hughes mare, Hosier, 12-1 from the 3-hole. Get Her Number is going to come in from San Luis Rey for Gary Barber and Peter Miller. And last seen winning the American Pharoah. So, seasonal debut, and one of three seasonal debuts in this race, which adds intrigue. 8-1. Javier Castellano picks up the mount. Get Her Number. Dialed in out of the Bernstein mare. Bred by Philip and Brenda Robertson. Twilight Blue. Pretty much the outsider in the group, but not by much. Just won an allowance in the mud in February. An Air Force Blue out of a Rahi mare for Carl Moore, Joe Sharp. Brian Hernandez Jr. gets aboard. 15-1, Twilight Blue. Keep Me In Mind, who's had, you know, fits and starts this year, trying to get his season going. And he will get it going Saturday. Keep Me In Mind, the Leia Band, out of the Victory Gallop Mare, and Cypress Creek Equine, and Arnie Benowith, Robertino Diodoro, Davey Cohn, back aboard, and not seen since the Kentucky Jockey Club. And, of course, you know, there's going to be a referendum in the handicapping ranks on the Jockey Club. And I'm sure there's people who, you know, are going to be dubious, you know, based on everything that, you know, has run out of it. But ahead of that, I mean, you know, he had been third by two in the juvenile and second to Essential Quality as well in the Breeders' Futurity. So, and of course, he was a maiden when he broke, when he won at the Kentucky Jockey Club, if you had forgotten that. So Keep Me In Mind finally gets to the racetrack, 4-1, concert tour. The principal Baffert, Joe El Rosario, has been with him since day one. January, wins the debut at 6, comes back in the San Vicente, wins that at 7/8, and now stretches out to the mile and a 16th, 2-1. Second choice behind Caddo River, concert tour, Gary Mary West, homebred, Street Sense out of a Tappan mare. And Superstock is the other seasonal debuter, Wolseley and Aspison, and Steve Trains. Irv Wolseley and Keith Asmussen, $70,000 Keeneland Yearling, the dialed-in son, beaten a half length when last seen in the Street Sense back in October. So it's been, you know, it's been a good 100-plus days for Superstock. He could come back running. He's had a nice, steady series of works at Fairgrounds, and that includes, you know, a couple of sub 101 5/8. Kind of notable. Usually from Asmussen, you'll see 102s, 102, 102. And this is a horse that has recorded a pair of 5 furlong works under 101. That's fast for an Asmussen barn trainee. He usually doesn't, yeah, that Superstock might come back running. He's 6-1, Joe Talamo gets the call. So there's your field for the Rebel, and it's fun. It's you got established horses when it comes to, you know, Caddo River and Concert Tour and Keep Me In Mind. You got the comebackers, Get Her Number, Superstock, and then you got the fresh faces. This is all right. It's going to go off at 6:16 Eastern time. And then, of course, you've got the Essex, where Tax finally, after considering a couple different spots, Tax finally turns up. And the Azari only drew 5, but 5 okay types, including She Dares the Devil and Get Rid of What Ails You, Latruska, Motion Emotion, and Evotante. It's a nice, well-matched 5. I mean, you'd rather have 5 nice horses like that than, you know, 2 nice horses and 6 flotsam and jetsam. Should be okay. And then I mentioned the return of Whitmore. And once again, the Hot Springs. This is again the Hot Springs, and then leading to the Count Fleet. Listen to this lineup again for the Hot Springs. Boulder, you know, who's emergent. Flagstaff, Mr. Jägermeister, Engage, Fire Crow, Whitmore, and CZ Rocket. And just like last year, where that series leading to the Count Fleet was early season, you know, serious early season quality. So, very nice. Should be fun. Now, the one thing we're dealing with is potentially weather issues, because they're talking a nasty couple of days. I haven't checked back, but they were, I think the last I had heard, that they were talking some some weather issues. So we'll get the latest as the morning goes on. All right, we'll see. And right now, the morning's going to go on with Dick Powell. We'll get Dick in here. Won't even take a break. seeing as how I took a I took a walkabout to start the show. There were some other things that were making me laugh all morning. Chuck Simon, if ever I have to worry that the morning is going to be, you know, interrupted and get sidetracked, it's me reaching out to Chuck or Chuck reaching to me for something. And luckily, it didn't include a phone call. We were just texting back and forth. But, you get on the phone with Chuck, you might lose a day. if you're not lucky, you just start talking, and then one thing leads to another, and then food gets brought up. Invariably, Chuck and I talk about something food related. I should also mention, by the way, while we're waiting for Dick, Swiss skydiver, in the Beholder Mile. If you didn't see this yet, yeah. She's shipping out, and you got two graded snakes, the Beholder, the grade one, and the San Simeon, turf sprint, and Swiss Skydiver facing off against seven, including Harvest Moon and As Time Goes By and so forth. But Swiss Skydiver seems like, based on what Mike Welch has been reporting in the mornings, feels like she's been tuned up for this seasonal debut, Swiss Skydiver Saturday in the Beholder Mile. It's kind of these next 2 weekends, a little bit sedate. Obviously, Oaklawn with the nice card, but not stake heavy. I should mention Turf Paradise tomorrow. It's the Phoenix Gold Cup card with the Oaks and Derby, the Turf Paradise Derby and the Arizona Oaks, and the Cotton Fitzsimmons. The Standard at Phoenix, so they got their winter highlight as well. Let's welcome in Dick Powell. Dick, good morning.
Steve, good morning. I'm sorry about your bot invasion, but
well, I haven't even mentioned I had the vaccine, so I suppose there's all kinds of bots running through my bloodstream by now.
Right, or your RNA, not your DNA, your RNA. I get the second dose today at 12:30.
Excellent, excellent. What'd you get? Did you get Moderna or the other one, Pfizer?
Moderna.
So did Tina. I got Pfizer, and hers is 4 weeks apart. Mine was 3 weeks apart.
Yeah, mine's four. Yep.
Interesting. All right. Well, good for you. And so that means what? That means you'll be out nightclubbing this weekend, or?
Well, I haven't stopped, so this makes it safer for me. One night, dopey story. My wife had to go to the hospital, so we're going to Albany Med, and we wind up somehow. We're down by Central Avenue, and it's literally 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And we drive by this one building, and there got to be 100 people standing outside this club. You know, so there's like a whole world out there that I am not part of. I don't know about, but a lot of people are. So yeah, my clubs, most of them like. 1 year, Sandy Goldsall put on the best horse racing party I've ever been to. It was when Fleet Alex was going to the Belmont. And he rented some place in the Meatpacking District.
Ooh.
And had he had the paparazzi there. It was fantastic. And the interesting thing was, you get there, and it's like 8 o'clock at night. And the party was from like 8 to 11, but down there, those places where they have nightclubs don't open till midnight at the earliest.
Absolutely.
So he had use of this one club. I don't remember the name of it, but he put on the greatest party. If anyone ever wanted to do a party for racing or anything else like that, Sandy's the one to talk to. He pulled it off.
Well, and I've also heard. I mean, obviously, the Derby party scene has its own. I mean, that's a whole separate topic. But there was also, and I hate to bring him up, frankly, the breeding farm operation outside of Schuylerville, Stonebridge.
We used to buy a table for that.
That was a big deal for several summers.
Yes. It's hard to describe, but you go to a farm, and you go to a barn, but not a barn with stalls, like an arena type barn, and they trick it out. And they have everything imaginable. And one night is Willie Nelson, another year.
Yep.
Gladys Knight. We got to see Liza Minnelli with a 15-piece orchestra. I mean, that was just like...
Liza with a Z?
Yes. Just unbelievable. And he would bring in those kind of acts to the pier, and it was a fundraiser for Equine Advocates. So we would buy a whole table and then have friends come with us and stuff like that. So we did that 3-4 years, and T. Boone Pickens was there one night because he had married Madeline Paulson.
Yes.
So they were guests and stuff like that. And then that was interesting. That was different. And then to see that kind of entertainment in that setting, which I guess if you have money, it's not unusual. If you have money, we're having our bat mitzvah, let's get Bruce Springsteen.
Exactly.
You know, and a lot of these musicians and whatever, that's a big part of their business. So. Yeah, got to go to that, but not the nightclub scene. No.
Well,
vaccination or no vaccination.
I'm going to put up I'm putting up a Twitter thread start that calling for people to explain, describe their. You know, their most memorable, I'm saying memorable, ostentatious, outrageous racing season party. And I suppose there's a few that have reached, you know, professional status. So this, I guess it has to be semi-professional or amateur, I guess, because when you talk about what goes on in the Ville, those are, you know, those Friday night parties or Saturday night parties are just... they're professional executed. The top neighborhood party around the Downs is the party at Grant Forster's place. That's the one by which all other parties are measured. I hope this catches a wave. It'd be perfect for the kind of day and the morning I've already spent. So we'll see if people respond. And Dick, to segue into the racing action, I mentioned the Tacitus story, and it just seems, you know, as we inch closer to World Cup, Dubai World Cup on the 27th, you know, here's poor Tacitus, who just can't ever catch a break, it seems. He's going to miss it. It was snatched away from him last year, and now he's got a little issue from a minor stall injury.
Yeah, he is frustrating for his fans. I've always wondered this, and you're not supposed to say this out loud, but is he a bleeder? Because some of his head-scratching performances would lead me to believe that he is. Now, no one's going to come out and say that. No one's going to come out and say blah, blah, blah. But I've always wondered that. Now, this obviously is not that. He's not going to make the World Cup because of that reason. But I've seen races and dumbfounding performances that can sometimes be easily explained.
I can't address it per se. Certainly the race, you know, certainly the race got, you know, an interesting injection to a degree with Mystic Guide decision, you know, with we talked to Stidham last week, and it just seemed like it was logical with Max Field trying the big gap. Why wouldn't you take Mystic Guide over there to try to win for the boss?
And another thing that not supposed to be talking about, but it's a huge story, is what's going on in the UK and the British Horse Racing Authority and the issue with Sheikh Mohammed's daughter. That is front page news, and it's a racing story. It's not just a story about a country leader and family drama, or whatever you want to call it. It's become a horse racing story, and it's become Julie Harrington is now the head of the British Horse Racing Authority, is now really on the spot. And she has said, we are in an existential crisis, and it's not going away. And with the Derby coming up, I think eventually over here, it's going to get talked about. But it's a gigantic issue over there, and we'll see what happens.
All you have to do is go back a couple of weeks to, you know, to the Saudi. There wasn't a whole lot of, vocal consternation. I really didn't see a lot of resistance, Dick. It's a topic that is very difficult for some people to acknowledge, it seems.
Yeah. And it's the thing with this issue is Princess Haya went to England with the kids and convinced a British court that there was a threat to the kids' safety and that they are protected under British law. And the daughter, who's not Princess Haya's daughter, well, I don't know what the issues are and what the facts are, but she did escape and was brought back. And now there's questions of, well, let's just see her. Let's show us that she's okay. And that still hasn't happened. So you can't imagine how big a story it is over there in the UK. And it's a racing story. Like I said, it's not a world leader type story, a political type story or anything else like that. It's now a racing story.
Well, and on the heels, you know, we talked last week in the teeth of the Gordon Elliott story with Nick Luck, and I reached out to Nick just to get his perspective, and this is obviously a tangential story that picks up where that left off. So it's. It's an ongoing assault on the sensibilities, and Dick, to be honest, it's worthwhile, and important to, you know, important to have the discussion out there. There's things that we're dealing with here that I didn't get a chance yesterday because I had missed Tuesday, so we were behind the eight ball trying to catch up. I did mention the outcome of the Scott Robinson portion of the case, but did you see the Bob Ehalt piece on Tuesday? Under the headline, 1 year after indictments, cheaters still prosper. Did you see this piece?
Yeah.
What was your impression? Because I thought it was shockingly irresponsible.
The problem is of the people that were indicted and currently waiting adjudication, many of them are still active, including Rene Allard. And he's now gotten to the point where Jeff Goral has not only banned him, but banned horses trained by him or bearded by him and from Tioga, Vernon, and Meadowlands. And so Goral's come down really hard on that. But tell me why you think it's irresponsible.
The quotes that particularly from Stuart Janney, intimating that there's, you know, that there's still, you know, as the headline was used, cheaters still prosper. I guess supposedly on the basis, according to Stuart, of high win percentages. That's what we're going to base this on. So the public and the horse playing community is being invited to look at anybody that wins at a high percentage, and oh, so they must be cheating. This was irresponsible of Stewart. What else do they want? They got their HISA, they got their USADA. What else do you want? You're going to get your widespread banning of Lasix. Does the carpet bombing of the horsemen of this country, does it have to continue like this? It's not enough that for 10 years they've impugned the reputation of the American horsemen? I mean, it's enough already.
Well, look at the thing yesterday with the guy in France, Marcialis. He's been given a 4-year suspension. He was running, they call them shadow operations, we call them beards, in Chanty and another training center. And, you know, how many times have I read Pollock and certain trainers in France comment on how bad America is? When it happens over there, it's because it was an overage or it was a contamination or anything else like that. But when it happens over here, it's clearly part of this giant conspiracy by the cheaters to cheat and control racing. I think we talked about this once before. Dick Mandela's proudest achievement. Now you would think, well, some poor Breeders' Cup races when they're all running, you know, one day. And no, it's when he was able to get the Cal Racing Board to drop all charges on him and a couple of the trainers on contamination on Jimson Weed.
Right.
And it took him forever, and he won, and he says that is his proudest achievement. And he knew what he was up against, and he knew what was going to happen and everything else, and he fought it tooth and nail, didn't back down, didn't take a plea at the end and stuff like that, but No, you're absolutely right. Yeah, but that part, though, yeah, yeah. But they're not going to be happy. I mean, you said it from day one, Steve. They want Muffy and Puffy having their horses race in a field on weekends, and you know, the rest is so unseemly and gambling. How dare they just have their own little sport, their own little rules, and stuff like that? They won't be happy until they destroy the business. And yes, you would think that. Hello, you won. No, nope.
Right? I just don't get it. I had some off air conversations since Tuesday night. There's so many people that whether it's HBPA and THA and the people that responsibly represent the horsemen and it's incredibly disheartening for them. I mean it's not enough that they've already indicated they'll adjust to whatever. Whatever scenario is presented, to be consistently painted with this brush and the insinuations, and there's other irresponsibility involved. I mentioned the Scott Robinson adjudication and. The Blood Horse has a headline: Service Navarro case defendant gets 18 months in prison. Scott Robinson, nowhere in the actual reporting, Bill Finley reported it correctly. Scott Robinson's not tied to Service and Navarro. He might have been part of the group of people that were arrested and indicted. But the idea here is to basically pile on the scenario. It's just to me a real disservice to the rest of the industry and the community that. That plays by the rules, that is doing what they can. I mean, it's not enough that the rank and file horsemen already face an uphill battle, and certainly in New York, where you've got the Department of Labor and you've got the taxation department rifling through payrolls. Workman's comp, which at least has been moderated somewhat, but now they're evaluating. They're going through all the payroll, trying to find ways to penalize horsemen on payroll tax. This is the new gambit, and there's trainers that are going to get hit with $20,000, $40,000, $60,000 bills. Here in the short term, and it's not enough that the rank and file horsemen already are up against it with a tilted field, basically an 80-20 scenario where 80% of the best horses are in the hands of 20% of the training community, but now you also are going to have the supposed registrar of the breed that allegedly has the interest of the industry at heart. You're going to be painted by them as a bunch of drug-addled scumbags. It's enough already. Just sickened by it. Stuart Janney, I mean, you guys have won. You got everything you wanted. I didn't want to get into this, but it's just grotesque. They've already got everything. You already dominate and control. What else do you want? Who else has to be browbeaten into submission?
Well, and one thing I've had from day one and hasn't changed is with the horse race HISA, who determines who they go after? They act like they're going to be completely independent, which I'm sorry, I still don't buy that. So now they keep referencing more and more this, what is it, Five Stones? Mm-hmm. This investigative body that was brought in. And now, I don't know Five Stones' background. I don't know any names. I don't know who works for them. I don't know their knowledge of the racing industry or anything else like that. But I that's where I get off the bus. That are you going after everybody, or are you just going after the seeming low-hanging fruit? And I've just questioned that. Who's going to make that decision as to which barn gets strip search, which farm gets the out of competition testing? And don't tell me, you know, the world works. So and so's going to get an out of competition testing visit. You don't think that person's not going to get tipped off? I mean, come on.
Well, yes and no. I mean, that part I don't know. I will say, you know, I mentioned this a little bit in passing. You know, in New York, maybe a month ago, there was a gaming commission came around and took hair samples. They went around to every barn in New York and they clipped hair samples. And I know a lot of horsemen were thrilled. They said, great.
Yeah.
Let them test the hairs and you know main testing and you know looking for residual effect. So there's an effort. There's plenty of efforts being made. And you know the greatest and most unusual part of this whole HISA concept and USADA is I mean they're going to have to rely on the same. You know, on the same mechanisms that are in place already, what enhanced methodology do they think is going to be any better than what is already a constant attempt to stay ahead of cheating? I just don't get it.
I did some writing on boxing, and they were involved with the Floyd Mayweather Manny Pacquiao fight, and they weigh in the day before, and the fight was at 147, and Floyd obviously weighed 147 at that precise moment, and then his fighting weight was probably 155, 160, so they have a field rep at Floyd's house after the weigh-in. And he goes to his house and gets hooked to an IV. Because the impression what the media wants to give you is, all right, you weigh in, and then you go back and you have a bunch of mashed potatoes and steak and put some weight back on. Because you had to cut to get down to the weight. Well, Floyd had flushed his system out with an IV. Which totally destroys any drug testing, and this is what USADA is saying. We had a field rep at his house after the weigh-in. Well, the field rep just apparently stood there and let him do it, and it wasn't unusual. It wasn't like anything out of the norm. So now the fight's over. And then 3 weeks after the fight, they grant him a therapeutic use exemption. And I'm like, this just doesn't sound right. The other thing is, if anyone wants to spend 2 hours, HBO has a special called The Scheme. And it's about college basketball recruiting. A lot of it's been in the media with Brooke Richardson and various people, University of Arizona, different big-time colleges got drawn up into this. But the story is really about the Southern District of New York and how their tactics and methods are pretty arbitrary as to who they go after. And everyone thinks, oh, once the feds get you, well, some of these people that have been indicted, if they have the means to fight and go to trial, I hope there's a betting line as to who's going to get convicted and who's going to get acquitted, because not everyone gets convicted. I mean, most people just cop pleas and stop the bleeding and walk away. But this one HBO special shows in great detail the methods that we use to try to get this one, like, 22-year-old kid who was like the mastermind in their head, but they never touched the major coaches. They touched the assistant coaches, and they allowed the major coaches to stand behind the shield of, oh, I don't know anything. I don't know what you're doing. I don't acknowledge that or recognize that. No, that wasn't me. They were perfectly willing to play that game. So I see that as a corollary to horse racing, where the blue collar trainer and the trainer that can boost the Ford legal fights and things like that are the ones that are going to be under the gun.
Well, I like everybody else, want to see, you know, a truly level playing field, but there's still going to be, operations that have the wherewithal to spend more and to provide, you know, the most exclusive legal therapeutic support for their horses. And I mean, to try to suggest that just because there's some trainers that have high win percentages, I mean, there's some trainers who have high win percentages because they claim horses for 20 and then run them for 10. I mean, you want to be out of touch with how some outfits win at high percentages. It's not that hard. Claim one for 40, run it for 25. And if it gets claimed for 25 and you get your share of the purse, you still come out ahead of what you claimed it for. I mean, maybe those mathematics are forgotten by, or aren't even aware of by people that have never claimed a horse. I just also
have a history of hiring trainers that have high win percentages.
Yeah, that's
when we didn't make win percentage what it is now.
Correct.
You raced your horse into shape, and now we don't have that. So instead of having three starts, and the third start is the money start because the two starts have gotten me in shape. But meanwhile, those first two starts are filling races. Now under this system where the win percentage for the trainer seems to be the best way of getting business, you're encouraging a system where the horses are in the barn and not out on the racetrack. But when some jockey club member stands up and raises his hand and says, I do not hire based on 1% of the trainer, then I'll believe it. But I've yet to see that.
Yeah,
I don't think he's in the real world. I think he's in the Ivy Tower.
Yeah, that topic we haven't talked about that in ages, but I mean it certainly has been addressed. How, you know, the era of the percentage, it used to be. I mean, you know, if you were a brilliant horseman, you won at 17%, 18%, and everybody else wanted, you know, 13-14%, and you know, that was the differential. Nobody cared about it. It was a non-issue.
And you had 40 horses.
Yep.
You didn't have 400 horses.
Yep. That's a whole, yeah, that's another. There's all of these have been, you know, all of these topics have been included in discussion about, I mean, if you feel that, you know, that there's a malaise, there's many very clear attributable factors that, you know, that are included. And then, of course, we get into the takeout issues and the bet pricing structure and, you know, some of the other things we actually have been talking about more frequently of late, as you know, as a, you know, as a, not as a quick fix, but as a way to improve the long term prospects of participation by players. So, well, Dick,
because we are it. We are the one-legged stool.
Yeah.
Racing is deriving its revenue from us, not deriving it from parking and food and beverage and commissions and programs and things like that.
Yeah. Well, especially the last calendar year, for sure. Dick, let's get a Hong Kong conversation in and hit the highlights.
Hey. Yesterday we were at Happy Valley and it was an interesting day. One favorite won. It was an odds-on favorite. But the other eight non-favorites paid 790, 1260, 16-7, 940, 13-70, 15-80, 17-15-80. So the other horses were all single-digit second, third, fourth choices. So even though one out of nine favorites won, it was very formful racing. Turf was good. The running times were plus and minus right around standard time. Joe Marrera's back. He had been suspended, so he had one win. Zach had a winner. Zach picked up eight wins when Joe was suspended. He had five last Wednesday at Happy Valley. He had three over the weekend at Shot 10. He had one yesterday, but he still trails by 22. But he's riding, you know, he's 15 out of his last 77, and Zach is still riding very, very well. So Joe opened up that big lead, and it's going to be very, very difficult to catch. On the main page of HKJC.com, there's a microsite for the BMW Derby, which is coming up a week from Sunday, March 21st. So that's coming up quick. They've picked the 14 horses with five also eligibles. These are the top-rated four-year-olds that are still in training for a mile and a quarter race. So that's been done, but they haven't done the draw yet. That won't be done until next Thursday. But the horses have been selected. No jockey assignment yet. And this week, Big Point Racing is on Saturday night, not Sunday night. So Saturday night at midnight Eastern time, 9 p.m. Friday night Pacific time. So all day tomorrow, you can go to the current odds on HKJC.com and get the current odds for all the horses, all the races, not just the first race. So you're able to do that tomorrow as they go into tomorrow night's racing. So that's a little quirk in the schedule. And the following weekend will be the BMW Derby. This Saturday night, Friday morning, Orgis, Picone, and Chow are still suspended. Joe is back. He was back yesterday, so we don't have that issue where he was in and out of the penalty box there for quite a while. John Size has taken the lead among the trainers. He has 51, has the founds, that's 48. And John Size has 12 out of his last 50. And while that's a very good percentage, when you realize that many of these big races, John has more than one starter. So he's been red hot lately. Casper's still doing well. just hasn't been able to maintain that pace, because in handicap racing, when you're winning races, you're moving up at least 5 pounds, sometimes 7, and possibly moving up enough to where you're going up to a whole different class level. So it's great to win, but there's a price that they pay to win. Obviously, you race for more money as you move up. So Casper's kind of paying that price for a great first half. He slowed down a little bit in the second half. John Size looked pretty good for the rest of the meet. So that's a little bit of a wrap-up. And give you a couple picks for Saturday morning. We have 8 turf races, 2 on the all-weather, and I am going to go with the all-weather race. Race number 3 is an 1,800-meter all-weather race. This is a 2-turn race. They got a pretty good run into the down the stretch before they hit the finish line the first time. Post position is important. Drew 11. I like number 5, Crown Avenue. He had been in good form on the all-weather. Then he went to Happy Valley Turf last time out, March 2nd. Didn't run bad. Now he's back on the all-weather for Dennis Yip and Zach Purton. He's a son of Hardspun, and Hardspun is a very good sire in Hong Kong and extremely good on the all-weather surface. So I think Crown Avenue, number 5, has a big shot. He draws post, too. He has some pace. I think Zach can be forwardly placed and just settle him, gallop along. And you'll see on the all-weather, speed holds up pretty good. So we'll see how that goes with number 5, Crown Avenue. If you want to hook him up with someone, number 3, Double Take, is an all-weather specialist from Casper Sounds. Karis Teton's going to ride similar. Record's good, but he has a totally different running style. He will be way, way back, and he'll be finishing strong. So you want to play a Quinella, nice 3-5 in race number 3. Another pick, go to race 7. It's a turf race going 1,200 meters, 95-plus handicap. So this is a class 1, $3 million Hong Kong purse money, which is, divide that by 7, it's close to $400,000 U.S. So it's a big purse money, big purse race. A lot of these are getting class relief. They've been knocking heads against the best turf sprinters over there. I'm going to go with number 4, Computer Patch, who just couldn't handle the big time horses. But I think against class 1, I think he finds the right spot. Been kind of weakening in his last couple of starts, but that was against Hot King Pawn, Explosive Witness, Bannon Smash, the Japanese horse who shipped in and won. So Computer Patch gets some big class relief. He draws well in post 7. He can start the pace there with Neil Callan. And I think Computer Patch, of the ones who are getting class relief, I think he can take advantage of the most. So that's race number 7. Number 4, Computer Patch. So we've got a little quirk in the schedule. Race a day early, Friday night Pacific, Saturday morning East Coast, and then the following weekend we get the BMW Derby as the 4-year-olds wrap up.
Nice.
4-year-old classic series.
Excellent. That's good, actually, for Friday night, because you know, it's a modest, kind of a moderate day Saturday, so we can get front-loaded and enjoy it into Saturday, where Oaklawn will be the principal focus. Dick, I appreciate it, and also thank you for opening the door for a little sounding board opportunity. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Okay, next week.
Dick Powell, everybody. HKJC Racing on Twitter and HKJC.com. So another nice weekend on tap. Let's take a pause here. Might be our only break, actually, looking at the time. It's 10:20. Let's take a break here. I got Tony. I want to slip in for a quick hit. Did you see that clip that Ryan put up, Ryan Flanders, Benny South Street? He's obviously doing some work for Trip Notes Pros. And he got this great head-on clip from, I guess, fairly recently at Parks, where Castillo wins a race, and Tony was trying to figure out who it is that he Castillo beat, and the guy was not amused. And took the stick and threw it at Castillo. He said, it's pretty funny. And so I sent it to Tony. I said, did you see this? And he loved it. It's important to stop short of guys punching each other, in director's chairs. But you can tell they take it seriously. Well, John Court yesterday about his son beating him on the wire at Kentucky Downs. That was fun. Let's take a quick quick break here, and we'll come back with Tony. We got Haskin. We got Andy. I want to get Andy in for a couple of minutes at least and get some final thoughts on the racing last week in New York from him. It's a quiet weekend. We got the correction on Saturday at Aqueduct, and that is one of the races for the cross country, and more. Got plenty to do. Back after this, Tony Black.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews.